everybody. Welcome back to Bannerbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each episode, we'll be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever. And this week, we watched one of my picks, which is The Hunt. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey, everyone, it's Samuel.
It's Rick.
It's me, Tyler.
Am I John?
Okay. So I think I was the only one here who had seen this before, is that correct?
Correct. Yes. You are correct.
Okay. 100%. I'll quickly talk about how this came to be. Whenever I am just like by myself and in a certain mood, I look up new like horror movies to watch. And this is not actually a horror movie, but it's put in that genre for some reason, probably just because it's violent. They just put it in there. And I took a chance on it. It looked fun. And within the first 10 minutes, it sold me by not letting me know who the main character was. And I was obsessed with it. I've been obsessed with it since then. I have been so excited to show it to people and watch it with Samuel specifically. And I kept thinking of it whenever we'd have movie nights when he was like, is there anything you want me to watch? And I was like, well, yes, but we have to wait for Bannerbox because we're watching it for the podcast. So I've been very excited about this. So I'm excited to hear everybody's thoughts. Had anyone heard of this aside from hearing me talk about it?
Yeah, I had. I remember it came out. I forget.
It was 2020.
Yeah, 2020. Yeah. And I remember the big stink was that, oh, it's this terrible liberal movie about hunting Donald Trump supporters and all this. And then, you know, I read other articles. It's like, no, that's not quite what it is.
No.
So I was always interested in it, but I'd just never gotten around to doing it. So I was really happy to sit down and watch it with you guys tonight.
Yeah, what's funny to me, which watching it makes sense, and it was part of even why I was, and I know it was all joking, but part of why I was chuckling at Tyler's feigned reactions at the beginning of the movie is that everything that I heard from this movie was all the super liberal people hated it and all the super conservative people hated it. And I think that was just so appropriate.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the whole message of the movie. And
yeah.
I appreciated that. The discourse surrounding it when it first came out makes so much sense because, yeah, if you're super polarized to one side or the other, they are coming after you in this film.
Yeah, they really are.
What about you, John? Have you heard of this other than me talking about it?
No, it never once crossed my radar, I think, ever.
What about you, Tyler?
I've never heard of this movie.
Not even when I've talked about it?
Nope. I wasn't paying attention.
There's a shock.
No, I genuinely... you may have mentioned it. I didn't even put together that I've heard about this before. So I went in as blind as one could. And that was my experience before watching the movie.
I'm so happy about that.
Oh, yes.
Well, this came out in 2020. It was directed by Craig Zobel. I probably mispronounced that.
That's
written
okay.
by Nick Hughes and Damon Lindelof. Probably butchered that, too. And stars Betty Gilpin as Crystal and Hilary Swank as Athena. You can watch this on Peacock, or you can buy or rent it on Prime Video, YouTube, Apple TV, and Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, 12 strangers wake up in a clearing. They don't know where they are or how they got there. They don't know they've been chosen for a very specific purpose, the hunt. Samuel.
So our director has not done much at all. I haven't heard of any of his films. They're all small little indie films, so I'm not even going to bring them up. What he's, I guess, a little more well-known for is he's directed some episodes of some popular TV shows. He's directed episodes of The Leftovers, American Gods, and he directed a couple of episodes of Westworld. And then he's directing some in The Penguin, the upcoming show.
Oh,
in the Matt Reeves Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's our director. That's really it for his filmography. He hasn't done much. The one writer, Craig, whatever his name is, I couldn't find anything on.
Craig was the director.
Other
Nick,
guy.
Nick and
that,
Damon.
Nick.
Yes.
I couldn't find anything on. But Damon Lindelof, on the other hand, has written some fascinating stuff.
Oh, here we go.
So he wrote the first two new Star Trek films, the reboots, Star Trek and Star Trek Into Darkness. He wrote Cowboys and Aliens.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
He wrote Prometheus.
What?
Okay.
He wrote World War Z.
What?
He wrote Tomorrowland. And then let's talk about his TV credits.
He's gone all over the map, man.
He wrote, he was one of the lead writers of Lost. And executive produced it with J.J. Abrams. He was one of the lead writers of The Leftovers, presumably where he met this director, and was an executive producer on it. He executive produced and wrote all of Watchmen. He also wrote some Phineas and Ferb.
Bro.
How am I supposed to feel about that?
And he's also written multiple comic runs of both of Batman and of the Hulk.
This just makes me so happy. I love that it's so chaotic.
Oh, and he acted in the show Once Upon a Time.
Dude, I liked Prometheus.
That's crazy.
So
I want to be him when I grow
up. I know, for real. Like, what happened?
He's won 3 Primetime Emmy Awards.
Oh my goodness.
And has been named one of the 100 most influential people in the world.
What?
What a man.
Legend.
In the world.
Yep, by Time Magazine.
Well, Damon Lindelof, if you can manage it, I would love to speak with you. feel free to contact us. Okay, well, now we're actually, since this is the quick review, we're not going in, through the plot summary, so I'll just give, like, the basic rundown, which is, yeah, a bunch of people get brought to a manor, they're getting hunted, and one woman ends up, like, going through, and, you know, big spoiler time, because that's what this podcast is. She ends up living, because she served in the military, so she's a good fighter, and knows how to find all the traps and stuff. And that's the very basic bare bones of it, but it's very, like, is satirical the right word? Would you agree?
Oh, 100%.
1,000%.
Yes. 1,000,000%.
Yeah. This is straight up just a satire about, like, the way the world is now as far as, like, how, you know, liberals versus conservatives, and the internet, and social media, and all this different stuff, and I'm obsessed with it, and I love it so much.
To me, it was essentially just, hey, the internet polarizes people to an extreme degree. Like, just felt like the movie.
That was the main
Let's look at the polarization
of
the internet,
yes.
Which I loved. I thought it was fantastic.
Yep.
I was just so happy as I was sitting there hearing Rick cackling over in the corner every time something ridiculous happened. It made me very, very happy. But I don't want to hear about how other people love this movie. I want to hear what Tyler thinks about this movie.
This movie sucks so hard.
There were no horses.
And how can I even rate this movie without a horse? We have to use the pig method, and it's not the same. I did not like this movie, Sam. I am. I hate so much that happened, but I think what I disliked the most was that it's obviously, I'm not an idiot. I know it's satirical. I know it's pardon the language. I know it's just taking the piss. I get that. I understand that.
It takes equal shots.
Yeah, it does.
Oh,
it absolutely much so. Does.
No. I definitely think it attempts to. I don't know. It did feel lopsided for starters. Moreover, I do think it. I'm definitely not a slasher guy, and that was a theoretical. Before this movie and was confirmed in this movie.
I did warn you.
No. It's not about that.
Okay.
It's just how slasher films are made.
The plot
films.
Of a slasher.
The overall archetypical flow of the genre is not for me. And I learned that. And I got to learn that firsthand through this movie. Because all
so
of the tropes
that
it...
consider it a slasher.
Oh, it's 100% a slasher.
Because I don't like slashers. But
it's,
I love this.
It's very much a slasher.
Okay.
Slashers bore the crap out of me. They're so boring. But this is very entertaining.
Well, I do think that's because of the gimmick that it's deploying, which is being in the face and being very politically charged on both sides to try and drum up, you know, to try and be hyperbolic about it. But this movie, so take the politics out of it for a second, which is what I was trying to do to try and really look at this movie just apolitically.
Yeah.
I do not think it was made very well. It looked like a indie film, like a glorified indie film in terms of how it was shot. This is an indie film?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, well, that explains it.
It's Blumhouse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Blumhouse is a full production company. How can it be an indie film if it's Blumhouse?
A24 is also indie
films. Yeah, it's Blumhouse is definitely... It's not any of the major film studios.
There is a difference between those types of films and an actual indie film. Because A24 produces feature films. There's a difference between what A24 does when they get creative with it and an actual indie film. We've been in indie films. We know that there's a difference between the films that we've done and the films that we watched. And so
I think the word you're looking for is an indie film, but amateur film. Because A24 is indie.
Indie film is any film that's not with one of the major studios.
It's an indie film is something that is not ran through a studio. A24 is a studio. So is Blumhouse. That does not make it indie. It makes it the exact polar opposite of that. I know this. I've worked in this industry for a while. Regardless, it looks like it was... Regardless, I didn't think it looked very good. I thought the music was bad. I thought the plot was insane. And I understand that that's the point. But it did not land at all with me. And I appreciate what they were trying to do from a message standpoint. I despised how they went about it. That's my overall thoughts. I don't want to sit here and just rag on the movie. Obviously, this is a podcast with everyone where they get to say their piece. But you want my opinion? My opinion is don't ever show me a movie like this again.
Well, this, honestly, you talk about
Blumhouse the music. Blumhouse is considered indie, just so you know.
Officially. It's a production company. Yes. How can you say that it's a...
Okay. The only ones that aren't indie are Universal, Paramount, Warner Brothers, Disney, and Sony. Everything else is considered indie.
Okay. There's a difference... Okay. Regardless, it doesn't matter. There is a clear-cut difference between working through a production company and being an actual, traditional, conventionally understood indie film. And... Because it doesn't matter. Continue, please. I don't want to get caught up in the weeds about this.
Yeah, we don't need to get in the weeds about what it means.
Let's not go on about who's killed who.
Well, you're talking about, like, you know, the music wasn't very good. That, I feel, was very intentional, as well as some of the wacky shots, I think, absolutely were intentional. I thought it looked great, but also I'm not Mrs. Like, you know, I know that tends to be more of y'all's wheelhouse on when you talk about cinematography, and I can notice when something is really cool, like, you know, when they do a crazy shot that I'm like, wow, that was really awesome, you know, and it's exciting cinematography, and at least for me, I thought it was very
fun. I guess for me, all of the production aspects felt intentional.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, I don't know if you would agree with that, Rick, or not, but... Like,
I had no problems with it from that perspective.
Yeah.
I didn't find anything about the cinematography, the soundtrack, the sound treatment, any of that. I didn't find anything distracting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So there was nothing pulling my attention out of the story.
Now, we also liked the story.
That's true.
So if you don't
so
like
we were
the story,
kind of invested into
might,
it. Yeah,
you might
fair.
Then pick up on things
fair.
Or be bothered by things that we just weren't bothered by. Or that, like, for me, I think a lot of that was intentional. Like, the wacky camera in the fight.
Oh,
was
that,
100%
that was
intentional.
That was,
like,
yes.
It was like, this needs to look insane. Like, and they did a good job of it. It looked insane. And then the music I also thought was very intentionally, like, either so in your face with, like, the lyrics, or it was, like with the fighting, again, it's, like, you know, the same just basic fight music, then it fades down for a second, then the basic fight music comes back, and to me, that was hilarious, because I'm like, this is, like, royalty-free music, and I love that. Like, I noticed it and thought it was funny.
To be told, the only music song I remember is the Mississippi song.
That's, yeah, the Mississippi song.
To be told, the soundtrack didn't even register on a personal level for me. I was like, there was music in this?
Now, granted, I have watched it before, so I was looking at other things this time. And so maybe I don't remember noticing any of the music the first time at all.
No, I didn't even clock it once.
From a more story aspect, I think what I enjoyed about it was that it was absurd in its ridiculousness in a very intentional way, where to me, I felt that the message that the filmmakers were trying to convey was, this is how everyone acts online, this is how everyone tries to talk tough, and then you put them in a real world scenario, like, this isn't how people are.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's what it felt like. It felt like trying to just point out the absurdity that is how everyone talks in online spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, like, anytime it cuts to, like, I mean, for instance, like, we'll use an example from both sides, but we've got, like, one of my favorite parts of the movie is the hunters all inside their little hut.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That little conversation where they just keep calling each other out for, like, different, little, like, politically correct
things. And it's so ridiculous. Yeah. But you go on Twitter for 10 minutes.
And you find that.
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
And so it's literally just take a Twitter thread and put it in front of you with people actually saying it. And you're like, this is so insane. Why are people saying this?
Did you just say people?
Did you say guys? I can't believe you used a gender.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm gender.
Some of us might be. And then you got, like, then you got the whole conversation with, like, Gary and Don, where it's like,
right.
You go on Facebook, and that's the exact kind of stuff you buy.
Exactly.
Like, Gary's up there.
You,
like,
take the Twitter crowd and you pit them against the Facebook crowd, and that's what this movie.
Because, like, Gary has the whole thing that kills me. Like, the first time I watched it and this time, where he's like, look, I have a podcast. I know what I'm talking about. And it absolutely kills me every time. Oh my gosh, it's so funny. But no, it's like, it takes every comment that someone makes and just throws it in front of you to the point where you're just like, this is so stupid. Why do we act like this?
Yes.
And it's so funny to me. But I love it because every tiny little thing, especially this time around, because I knew what the story was and I knew what was going to happen, I was able to actually, like, as I was going through, I'm not going to break down every little thing because we're not doing that, but, like, as we were going through, I was like, oh, I know exactly what that, like, that was an allegory for this. Mm. And, like, every little thing I was picking through and I was just like, oh, that's, like, when this thing happens. Like, and it was a lot more fun. Like, you know, I had a ton of fun the first time, but it was even more fun this time because, one, I got to watch it with other people. Mm. And this is a great one to watch with other people. And just, like, I was able to pick out all that stuff, which is really fun. John, we haven't heard a lot of your thoughts.
No, I mean, honestly, it was just... I don't know what it is for me with these kind of movies, but there's a lot of action kind of keeps me engaged 9 times out of 10. But with the beauty of this being, like, satirical as well, added a nice other level than what you don't normally get out of an action movie. Because a lot of slashers don't have that benefit to them.
Yeah.
Like, slashers are purely... Scream kind of does.
Scream is making fun of the genre.
But you know, like, Friday the 13th, you know, you got... Freddy Krueger, all of them, they kind of sit there. They're mostly just popcorn flakes.
Yeah.
What I think is really refreshing is that this has a satirical motif. And truth be told, I would love to watch this movie again after rereading Animal Farm. Because it took a lot of inspiration for that. And I wonder how much of the movie, either was this just a small motif or was this a major motif?
A very, very small motif.
Here's the thing. I read Animal Farm back in...
7th grade.
Like fifth, like sixth grade, something like that.
Yeah.
So, like,
very, very small motifs from Animal Farm.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, I just had
Animal Farm was just the Bolshevik Revolution. That's all it was. I'm not even joking. Animal Farm is just the Bolshevik Revolution.
I mean, I believe.
Anyways,
we'll
move
save
on.
That for yours.
Welcome
and
to
Riggs
literature
and podcast.
But no, I think overall, I mean, it was just a.
I would love that.
It was a fun movie because I'm, you know, again, I understand satirical film a little more in detail. As far as satirical, because Samuel, is it you that said you don't like, no, it's spoofs, I'm thinking of spoofs.
Yeah, I don't like spoofs. I don't like spoofs and hard parody.
Hard parody.
But like satire like this or like The Princess Bride is right up my alley.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Princess Bride in a minute, I'm not going to comment on that.
No, he said in a minute.
And Tyler's
Tyler
just,
hasn't
Tyler
seen,
hasn't
it,
seen
at all.
It ever.
No one wants to show it to me.
We all want
we
to
watch
show
it
to
right
you.
Now.
Let's do it.
I'm in.
We will stop the podcast.
I'm busy tweeting about The Hunt.
But no, I think overall this movie, I just had a good time watching it. I mean, I like, you know, I wasn't, like, mind-numb like I was with most slashers. Like, I actually did get some of the points he was trying to make. But, I mean, overall, I mean, I just had fun watching it. And the gore... the effects were pretty cool, honestly. Was it all practical, or was any of it CGI?
I do not know. I haven't looked it up.
I would say a vast majority of it was practical.
I think they killed it.
All the actors are actually dead.
Emma Roberts dead.
I don't think there was a single bit of CGI. I think the only CGI that I was able to catch in the show was when she was in the bunker, took the sniper, and she shot the guy, and the blood splat was on his back. Because it was way too illuminated for where he was running.
I am getting a little bit of enjoyment out of looking at the initial reactions to this film, which is that Hollywood Reporter and Variety were super mad at it because of how anti-liberal it was. Meanwhile, Fox News and even Donald Trump tweeted about how horrible it was that it was so anti-conservative.
I was just reading about that.
And here's my thing. Any movie that manages to piss off both sides like that...
It's gotta be good.
It's like
watching this alone, I finished it and was just like, that was chef's kiss. Like, I loved it so much.
What were you saying?
It was amazing. So this movie is so much for me to watch and then go straight into the quick review. As I'm digesting it more, I feel like I'm able to compartmentalize how I feel a little bit better, as opposed to just being like, wow, I hated that, right? Now that it's kind of trying to resonate, I think this movie is honestly take everything that I enjoy in cinema, flip it on its head, and then shove it down my throat, right? Really, think about it. Look at my track record of the things that I mentioned that I really enjoy in cinema, and this is the opposite of that. I appreciate the message, but it's so... It is so blunt. There is no elegance with it. It's just open up, open nice and wide. We're going to cram it. And it's just like, okay, well, that's exhausting. The effects and everything was like gratuitous, which I understand. I understand that that's the point. I get that that's the point. I understand all of that. But it is such like, it is such the anti-me in terms of everything that I enjoy in movies that I wasn't offended by the politics. At first I thought I was, and then I really thought about it, and I'm like, I'm not bothered by that.
I actually knew that was going to be your answer, because as it was going, I was like, here's the thing, I like that it's not being subtle, because again, I think that's the point, but I also know how much you value subtlety,
how does that work with liking anime?
Oh, that's so true. How does that work?
Because with okay. With because different. Well, it is completely different, because the actual themes that are presented in anime, does it go over the top with its action set pieces and its fight scenes and its reactions? Yeah. And the ones with where the reactions are over the top, I actually steer away from. The animes that I have been on the record really liking are the more subtle ones. The ones that take a more kind of nuanced approach to what they're trying to talk about. Or the very few animes that break that mold for me that I think are absolute masterpieces are the ones that are just like, all right, take all the subtleties, take all the nuances, take all of that out of it. Do you really like a guy who is really angry because he's right and you know that he's right, and he just goes on an absolute warpath leaving no survivors because he's right and screw you and I'm going to yell really loud about it and power up? Yes? Cool. I like that. That's my popcorn flick. That is to me what Predator or Alien versus Predator is to y'all.
Well, and see, to me, that's what you kind of just described with this movie. Is what's satisfying about it is that there is a character who is in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Like you start to understand that pretty quickly, that mm-hmm. she's not supposed to be here,
right?
And so then you get to see her kill everybody,
yeah,
on both sides.
Yeah,
just be like, you're all horrible, I hate all of you, I would like to leave now. And to me, that's the satisfying part of it. Is exactly that. It's the person who's right getting to just say, okay, you're all crazy.
Well, and she's the craziest one of them all.
Yeah.
She's literally some closet psycho, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Something John said a minute ago, and I don't know if this will be a hot take or not, but I can't even remember what it was you said, but you triggered me to think that this movie actually has a lot in common with Cabin in the Woods. Did y'all see that?
I still haven't
seen it. I've heard about it. People have talked about it to me.
I know I need to. I haven't seen it yet.
But from what I've heard about it, that sounds...
Because it's kind of meta.
Yeah.
In the same way that this is very meta. But it's just meta about slasher flicks.
Right.
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 And, but it's good. And it has some of those same kind of, you know, shocking, exploding death kind of things. I don't know if I would necessarily call it gory. I think this may have had a little more gore than Cabin in the Woods, but even this, you know, the thing happens and it's over.
It's not as gory as like a Tarantino film.
Well, it's not. Right.
Or
it's
even
not
like a Friday
like,
the 13th, well, where you slowly draw the knife.
Or Nightmare on Elm Street.
It's not a lot of the kind of like Swedish horror influence, because Swedish horror loves to make you just like stare at something really
this
gross.
It's just like a quick shock, and then you're moving on.
Yeah.
Could you compare, like, I know there are general vague comparisons, but it's funny, when you compared Quentin Tarantino's gratuitous use of blood, 100%, no question about it, right? But when you look at how Tarantino uses blood in his films, I do think it's in stark opposition, or at least taking a much different route than how slasher films, or like this movie, for example, does blood and gore.
I would agree in some of his films, in other of his films, no. Very much depends on the scene, right? Like the car scene in Pulp Fiction. That's pure shock value.
Mm-hmm.
He uses the over-the-top gore for pure shock value in that scene. But then you take the gore in the whole last act of Inglourious Basterds,
mm-hmm.
and to me, that's the same way that they're utilizing it in The Hunt, or a very similar way.
I feel like, and this, I don't know, I'm not that versed in slashers enough to really make this point, so I acknowledge the asterisk. But I feel like because I love Quentin Tarantino and I love everything that he does, I feel like when he does it, it is a calculated, strategic, like moving a piece forward on a chessboard, right? I feel like there's a lot of thought behind using that shock value for a specific purpose versus slasher films, which is just, hey, you want to see a guy's head get blown off?
I guess my only thought is, when has Tarantino ever killed someone and not made it super gory?
Here's the thing. I don't know how to articulate this. And this is... I hesitate saying it like that. When Tarantino does it, it feels more inherently artistic in its intent than this slasher film made its gore.
Do you think that's actually, and this is a genuine question, but if suddenly just surprise plot twist, I was like, yeah, this is a Tarantino movie.
You wouldn't be able to, because it's not a Tarantino.
No. But what if I just did and was like, oh, by the way, I lied. This
what,
is
he like the
Tarantino.
Second unit director?
And
no, but he loved it.
That's great. That's great. I'm
but
happy
what I'm
for
saying
him
is,
because
what
he's
this,
happier than I am.
What if this was made exactly like this by Tarantino, and I just was like, surprise, this is actually directed by Quentin Tarantino?
That's such a hard question to answer, because it wouldn't have been made like this.
But I guess the question is, do you think there's... Because at least for me, I know there are certain people that just their name causes people to view it differently. And so, like, Tarantino has made so many good projects that now it's like, you look at anything with Tarantino's name on it and everyone's excited. And they're going to give it more grace than I feel like other movies, just because it's Tarantino.
The difference is the way everything's shot with him is there's such an air of purpose and artistic intent with it.
Tarantino included it in his list of top 50 of his favorite movies of all time.
That's incredible. Yes. That's incredible.
Tarantino,
I'm so happy. Good
also,
for him.
I still don't, and maybe I'm just weird, I just don't view this as a slasher
movie. I don't
movie.
Either at all.
I view the violence in this, while graphic, as almost cartoonish.
Yeah.
Right? It was just...
Yeah, it's
hyperbolic.
Over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. But slashers are over the top, but so are a lot of just like, I feel like action movies.
The slasher,
like,
the slasher violence, in my opinion, is to glorify the violence.
Yeah.
Right? It's disemboweling somebody,
yeah,
or, you know,
well,
whatever it is that happens. Where
which to continue... Well, sorry, I'll let you finish that.
No. I just don't think that was the case here. It was... This movie, you could... Every move was telegraphed.
Yeah.
There was... Well, except for, like, the very beginning... When, you know, you had all the guys out there at the box, and I was like, oh, he's good looking. He's going to be the hero. Nope. Oh, she's very attractive. She's going to be the...
That is my all-time favorite thing. The moment... Because, okay, this is a hot take for me. I was just talking to Samuel about this, like, a few days ago. I really don't love Emma Roberts as an actor. I think she's really mid. And so when she popped up, and she's walking around, and she's, you know, like, the pretty blonde, and then the guy's
doing her
interest. Immediately, I was like, oh, God, this is going to suck. And when she died first, I literally sat up and went, well, I'm in. Like, here we go.
She died second.
That is true. She died second. You're right.
I think what almost, and this is just the last point we can make on Tarantino, but I think what almost what would belie the fact that we feel like the violence in Tarantino films is somehow more artistic than this, is looking at this list, Tarantino's a big slasher fan. One of his movies, which is on his short list of perfect movies ever made, is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He considers a perfect film.
Wow.
So I
believe that.
I wonder how much of it is our perception because we view Tarantino films to be high art.
And that's what I'm saying. Is like
versus this.
And it's not even because he's not worthy of y'all feeling that way. And
we're all
like,
brainwashed.
Like, he is a fantastic director and movie creator. Well, like,
I actually have a counter argument to that. So, you know, it's like, well, what's the difference if he views that stuff as phenomenal movies, but then he takes the essence of the slasher films that he so adores and adds his artistic influence into it? Yeah. It changes the tone dramatically. You know what else does that? Into the Spider-Verse. The Spider-Verse movies, they take direct inspiration from the anime tropes that you've been very critical about in the past. But when Spider-Verse does it, it's different. Why? It's the same over-the-top style, but it's put through such an artistic filter that you look at it and you go, wow, this is incredible, because they're taking the things that turn people off to it more, that turn people off to that style of anime, and they put it through the artistic filter and give you that end product with the kind of washed version, if you will, of what they're trying to do. I think Quentin Tarantino does the same thing.
I think that I guess my only counter argument would be that as someone who doesn't like anime, that's my least favorite part of the Spider-Verse movies, is that they're too busy. They're too much.
Mm. Well, my counter to your counter is that's a bad take.
I like them. Like, I like them a lot, but that is like...
Right.
So I
got you.
It's not a comparable
thing. Hey, at some point we'll do Spider-Verse on this podcast because that'll give me another excuse to watch them, and I love Spider-Verse.
They are so good.
We'll watch those for the podcast at a different time. No, I wanted to just rephrase, because the way I said it makes it sound like I was just really happy to see Emma Roberts die. That wasn't what I meant. I'm sitting here
statement.
And I'm like, this that
you'll
sounds
get, you'll
bad.
This is going to get an email from Emma Roberts PR.
Oh, dude. Please? That would be so great. But no.
If you're listening, Emma, her email address.
Emma, come on to the podcast. We'd love to have you.
You know what? Actually, but no, it's... It's like for
bannerbox@gmail.com.
For me, her popping up and looking like the main character made it seem like it was just going to be a basic, the couple tries to survive the fight, mm-hmm. and then he's going to sacrifice himself and she's going to make it out but not have really earned it, because like you see that she doesn't know what she's doing. And so I'm just like, okay, this is going to suck. And I honestly didn't even, like, the first time I watched it, when you see the main girl in the beginning and she's doing the whole, like, creating a compass on the pond,
mm-hmm.
I didn't even, like, register her as a needful character. I was like, that's just a person. And so, like, watching it this time, I was like, they show her at the beginning? Like, I thought she appeared for the first time at the gas station. And so when that... completely just turned my expectations on its head immediately, and was just like, yeah, this girl you thought that was gonna be the main character, she's dead right there, like while she was about to have a moment with the guy.
And then they fake you out again with the other guy,
and again and again with different main characters, and like it keeps the tension throughout, mm-hmm. really the whole thing, because you're like, they're clearly not afraid to kill anybody. So like, this girl could even die at any point. Like, the main girl, you're like, like in the final fight, I was sitting there just like, she could die at any second, like, because they're not scared to kill anyone in this. But that's what like sold me immediately watching this. So I just wanted to point that out because that was something I knew from years ago when I watched this, how exciting that was. But what do you guys, and I'm so curious, what do you guys think this is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes?
With such a mixed bag of reviews, I'm gonna say 65%.
Okay.
Just because of the subject it covered.
I couldn't even know where to start. I would probably say 50. 50?
Okay, so 50 for you, 65 for you.
38.
Okay.
I'm kind of with Tyler. I mean, I feel like it's gonna be right in the middle.
Yeah.
Give me like 46.
Okay, Tyler, you're the closest by one. It was 57.
Hey, I did it.
You did it. Good job. And then audience score, because that was critical score. What is audience?
I think I want to go again with 65.
Okay.
It's slightly above average.
It's definitely higher. I'm going to say 60. I don't want to shortchange it, but 62.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, my guess is a lot of people didn't go see it because of the publicity.
That was what the poster was, actually. It and was then, the movie that everyone's talking about that no one's seen.
Yeah, but then I think the people that actually showed up and saw it probably liked it pretty well. So I'm going to go 74.
Okay.
62.
John, you're the closest by 166. You were very, very
close. How about
close.
That?
We're like making Danielle do math over here.
Well, now, last one, IMDb out of 10.
We got to do the pig method.
Oh my gosh.
Bastardized version of the pig method.
Not the pig method.
There's one pig.
There's a pig reference.
There's a pig reference. So we'll go with two pigs. So we got the two multiplier. I would rate the pig probably it was a good pig, but it wasn't the best pig I've ever seen. So I'd say it's probably a 7 out of 10. Cut that in half, or wait, whatever. 6.5. I don't care.
That'll do, pig. That'll
you
do.
You said 6.5?
Whatever.
Okay.
6.9. Okay. I've even lost track of what we're doing.
It's IMDb.
IMDb.
It's score. The pig method.
Yeah, you got lost in the weeds.
Yeah,
of the
yeah,
pig
yeah.
Method.
The pigs messed me up.
Yeah.
I'll
messed
I'll
me
stick
up, too.
With my number, 7.2.
Okay.
5.3.
I hate that you got it dead on, Tyler. That sucks so much that you didn't even do it right. You went, like, cut it in half. No, I don't know, 6.5, and just, like, made up a number, and it was exactly it.
That'll do, Pete.
Never punished.
Tyler, you were just meant to watch this movie. You were meant to.
Yeah, I was the target audience. I was the target audience. Yeah, yeah.
No, but, I mean, y'all said it, that, like, you know, everyone was talking about it, and no one went and saw it, and, like, it lost, I think, a little over $1 million in the box office.
Well, to be fair, it also came out.
No, we can't keep blaming
it. Well, no, there's a very easy thing to blame. The release date for this film was March 13th, 2020.
Ooh.
Yikes. I sympathize. Okay. All right. Well, you didn't tell me that.
I mean, yeah, they couldn't have picked.
Listen,
like,
I went through the same thing movie. I get it. I get it. I quit my fancy job to go work commission only, and my start date was the same
time. I think
time.
Maybe the worst release date for a film in
history.
Because
not only is it right when lockdown hit, but also everyone's trapped and only on their technology, all talking about all these horrible things.
There, the hun. I actually empathize with what you've experienced.
Emma, I'd like to personally apologize for anything I've said.
Emma,
about
we're so
you.
Sorry for what you
heard. This is actually an Emma apology.
This is an Emma apology podcast.
It is now.
All right, we got to recast now. Who's playing who in this movie?
Oh, Lord.
John, I want you to be Don so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John,
I think that's a requirement, right?
Hands down.
Is this your pig?
That was the moment. When he's standing there like, this is your pig, she comes up, like,
this
kills him, and
pig?
He's just blankly staring at her holding
Danielle. Danielle's Athena.
Are we going to say that Samuel's the girl?
I mean, you kind of are. I think you could be.
I think you could.
Yeah, so you're Crystal, I'm Athena, Oh, that fight would be so much fun.
That'd be sick. That would be sick.
I'm totally cool.
I could see Rick as the doctor.
You said who?
The doctor guy, the white-haired fella who was talking to them in the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking that or the male, like, store clerk. One of those two. Yeah.
And then Tyler's obviously Colonel Dale, right?
Naturally.
Whatever his name was.
Are you talking about the National Guard?
Oh, yeah. The National Guard guy.
No, I was going to say you're the Always Sunny in Philadelphia guy.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. That's all I wanted. He was so good. Like, he was easily my favorite part of the movie because he has such a phenomenal way of, like, doing that jackass character.
Like, in the beginning when he's like, can I get something, like, Mediterranean or, like, a small
Oh, and she's like, there's not a kitchen on here. And he's just like, is that the fancy wine that you got from the boat that would cost $250,000?
She's like, no, it's just
wine. He goes,
champagne.
All right, fine. But I adore him in Always Sunny, and he just played the same character in this movie, and I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, I think Tyler's that guy. I think that's him for sure. I love this. No, the National Guard guy, I feel like, has to be Colton.
Yeah,
there. Naturally.
I feel like it's 100%.
That's fair.
He might be offended at you saying that.
I don't know. I'll ask him. He's seen the movie.
Good.
I'm
just kidding.
Okay.
Isn't that the point?
What's the drinking game for this? We need to take a drink, finish your drink, and a shot.
Take a drink every time someone dies.
Oh, I was going to say take a drink every time I get pissed off.
You'll never stop drinking.
You know, I think take a drink every time someone dies.
I think
that's
fair.
A fair, like,
that's
sip
fair.
Rule.
That's
a good
dies.
One.
It's not a whole lot of, like, super repetitive stuff aside from the
death. Take a shot every time someone reloads on screen.
Did anybody ever reload?
Yeah.
The shotgun
yeah.
Twice.
It didn't happen
the shotgun,
time, so that's not
yeah.
a bad shot.
And then finish your drink every time the pig is on screen, which is four times.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Good call. Good
that's
call.
Fair. Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
In an hour and a half movie, that's going to be...
we might swap those.
Lost.
I don't know what's better or what's worse.
It doesn't matter.
All right, favorite and least favorite moments from this.
Ooh. What's his name? Glenn Howerton, the guy who played my favorite guy.
Yeah.
He is my favorite, and he just every time he was on screen, it was just like it was like a breath of fresh air. It was just like good. Someone who understands the assignment.
I think legitimately, maybe the moment that made me laugh the hardest for my favorite moment. Was the no more glass?
No more glass!
Oh my goodness!
That moment just
that
like both of y'all just went what? What?
I think all three of us on the couch said what?
You know what? Where my brain immediately went to? This was a low budget film, which I bet it was.
Oh my god!
All the other glass that they were taking out was freestanding glass
yep.
or glass that they
yep.
put that was like set deck. I bet that they weren't allowed to break
yep.
any glass on the house they were renting.
That would be
probably.
So funny.
I bet that's why it was because
yep.
they probably weren't allowed to break any glass on the house.
All right, it goes
that
up by a point if that's true, 100% easily, because
sure
that's actually
that
very
read,
funny.
That was the read I took. Was,
that's
oh, I bet they weren't allowed to.
That's very funny. My least,
I think one of my favorite scenes was when Dead Sexy fell in the pit
yeah.
and they got her out and then they blew up and she ended up right back in the pit.
That was very funny.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh gosh, I gotta think. My favorite, it's tied for a couple different things. It's tied for the moment when, well, really just all of the beginning when you don't know who the main character is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I absolutely love that. I love it so much. And then it's tied with just Crystal's facial expressions. They're so exaggerated. Like, when she sees the rabbit at the end and just makes that crazy face at it. And, like, there are so many moments when, like, when she just does things. And I'm like, I love that you're just a person. Like,
yeah.
like this is entertaining to me. I don't know why.
Oh, I know my least favorite moment. Why did... I guess she told the whole story and all that. I still don't understand why her and Don went back. I guess because the whole idea is that, like, get them before they can get us. But, like, they were home scot-free.
I think that was the whole thing, is that she was just like, it doesn't seem, I mean, I think that's what she was kind of saying to the National Guard guy, is he was just like, leave, you already won, and she's like, I don't really have anything else going on back home. Like, I may as well just finish what I started.
Well, yeah, or is kind of a is kind of an Ender's Game.
But if I'm Dawn, I'm like doing everything I can to be like, no, we are not going back. What do you mean we're going back?
Now he was a little in shock. He did just watch her, you know, pop a guy's head like a candle.
Oh, that was also one of my favorite moments. Was Rick? You were out of the room for it in the car when she's just listening to him talk, and she just slowly reaches up and grabs and just slow twists and like pulls her leg back and like cocks back and like aims the kick.
It's
and
so slow.
Oh, it's slow. It is actually very funny.
She pulls herself up, pulls her legs out, rotates, aims, kicks it like so hard, and it's so slow where you're like, what
the
is
guy
she
should
doing?
Notice at a certain point.
But he's just talking and he's like, I mean, there's probably
and
something
she's just like
did.
Slowly
and
nodding.
She, and she's realizing, she's like, oh, this guy is not on our side. Let me just, and you're down. Oh, it was so good.
And then Dawn having a full blown panic attack in the back seat of like, you just kicked the embassy guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was the whole thing is that she, you know, you don't really get an explanation right then, but then with the National Guard guy, she's like, you know, I kind of don't have anything else that really matters for me, and so this is kind of the only thing that's mattered in a while. I may as well just do this.
I thought that my least favorite moment was going to be the needless retelling of the tortoise and the hare, but Mississippified. But then the end of it
then
made
the
it
end
worth
of it.
It.
Well, because you're
your
sitting
mom
there.
Told you that story.
Because you're sitting there and you're like, we all know the story of this. And then she gets to the end where it's like, and then he comes in and he's got a hammer. And it's like, wait, I don't remember this part of the story. Like,
and then he's like, are we the tortoise or the hare? All right, get in the car.
She's like, like, oh, it's so funny. What about you, John?
So, I mean, favorite moment has to go to, so is this y'all's pig?
That was good.
I mean, I think my least favorite has to be, honestly, the I don't know what his name was, but the guy who was like, oh, do you have to gender it? Or is like, I'm sorry, I gendered it. That guy's death was kind of like, for a movie with a bunch of gore and like special effects, like that was kind of like, oh, he got shot in the butt. That's funny, but like, the end death was kind of like.
Oh, are you talking about when she took at the sniper and it looked like a paintball?
Yeah.
It did look like a bright paintball. That was exactly what I
that
thought
was
about this time. I was like, that is a bright splotch, isn't it?
That was a very lackluster. I mean, honorable mention has to go to Dead Sexy Girl. Was just, give me the gun, you snowflake.
Oh my gosh. I gotta look up, hold on. I want to show you guys what these character names are for all the different characters. So the actual character name for Dawn is Dawn with three question marks. There's a guy called Staten Island who was kind of the leader of the three in the gas station.
Yeah,
the one
sense,
on the phone.
Because he was from Staten Island.
There is a character, so Gary's actual character name is, in parentheses, shut the fuck up, Gary. That is what his character name is. Emma Roberts' character is called Yoga Pants. Who was it? It was one of the older guys. Is known as Target in parentheses as Chris Berry, and the actor's name is Chris Berry. Vanilla Nice was the tattoo guy in the cast.
The guy from Miami.
The guy from Orlando. Nice. And then the others aren't quite as entertaining. The only other slightly entertaining one is just Big Red was the redhead woman. And then Martin, parentheses, as Dean West, and it played by Dean West.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
You know what that is.
I do not.
When they show that in IMDb, that's just the name they were going by at the time.
Oh, I thought that was like, that's the character name. Because
now he goes by Dean J. West.
I was about to say, that's hilarious, but I did not know that. But yeah, so Chris Berry was just Target. And then Dean West was just Martin. And then the doctor character y'all referenced is just called the doctor. He never gets a name. Not an actual name. And then, of course, Dead Sexy is everybody's favorite.
I think the doctor's name is Ted.
Oh, I guess it is Ted. They just don't put it on IMDb. You're right, yeah. That's so weird that they don't put it on there. It just says The Doctor.
Because they yell at him later as
Yeah,
Ted.
You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had forgotten about that.
Is that the return of Ted Chiven?
Ted Chiven.
Tune into Dicebox to get that reference.
Well, I gotta think of what my... I mean, I guess my least favorite would just be the dead pig, probably.
Yeah,
that was definitely for me. There was no need to kill the pig.
Yeah, no need to kill the
Fair.
Pig.
They loaded so many rounds in that poor pig.
But, yeah, that would probably be my least favorite.
It was innocent!
Did everyone say all of theirs?
I didn't.
Okay.
I've talked about the bluntness. I'm not bothered by the political satire that was made. I'm bothered by how they went about it. So every time they made a political joke, it just felt so devoid of any semblance of like tact or nuance that I would want to see in it. And I understand that that's the point, but I hated it. That was easily my least favorite part of the movie.
I think it's not close. I think part of why I liked it is because most of those things I have heard people say. Like, it's not over the top. It feels so over the top, but then you sit and think for a moment and you're like, oh, I guess it isn't. Like, on both sides, right? Like, everything that the super, you know, red pill conservatives were saying, I'm like, I've heard all of that. Everything the super liberals were saying, I'm like, I've heard all of that too, and it's all insane.
Yeah.
And that's why you hear it
in a movie and you think, that's not realistic. That's a caricature of real life.
Well, I just realized that Betty Gilpin was in The Tomorrow War with me.
What?
What?
Yeah.
Hold on a second. What?
What?
Yeah, the movie Rick was in.
Oh, I forgot.
Oh,
me, Chris
yeah.
Pratt, Johann Stravinsky, Betty Gilpin.
You're like, she was in it, but with me.
Exactly.
Like, I was the star.
I will say, I got one more honorable mention that I completely forgot about that just now hit me. I will say, a second honorable mention has to go to, do you think because you're a woman, you deserve a second, you deserve a chance at mercy?
No.
Oh, it's so good.
Because Don's whole argument is like, she's a woman. It's like, as a woman, do you think you're going to take this mercy? No! She could have saved herself and she said, nah, I ain't going to be...
Oh, it was so funny. Because especially, like, even before that, you see her, like, twice snapping on the guys. Like,
yes.
For, you know, guys? And then, like, the guy, like, steps in front of her and she, like, shoves him out of the way. Like, stop
so
trying to protect
good.
Me. And then she's sitting there like, no. And of course, she immediately dies. No. Oh, so funny. Okay, I'm so fascinated. So let's say out of 10 jackrabbits, what would you rate The Hunt?
I'd give it 9 jackrabbits. That was
okay.
that was a good time. It was satirical. It was.
When you think about the other 9s that you've given, John. How
don't
do you,
listen to him.
How do you, sleep
listen
at night?
To him. It's a good choice, John.
Dude, I'm a Kraken. I like the Michael Bay Transformers movies. I think my...
No, he's got a point.
Yeah,
like,
he's got a point,
like,
though.
My movie system grading makes
his favorite,
no sense.
Let him cook.
His favorite Star Wars film was Attack of the Clones. The man is consistent.
Stop slamming the table.
It was
a point. Hey, look. I'm a simple man with simple tastes.
Samuel, you're so right.
But no, I'd give it 9. It was enjoyable to watch. I'd watch it again, probably.
All right, Samuel.
7.5 out of 10, pure popcorn flick. I enjoyed it. I would not go out of my way to... I don't know that I would ever go out of my way to watch it again, but I'm glad that I saw it, and if somebody threw it on at a party, I'd be like, oh yeah, let me laugh at this. This is fun.
Yeah, solid 8 for me. I can't wait to get Katie to watch this. She's going to laugh her ass off.
All right, Tyler. We've all been waiting.
I don't think I've ever done this on the podcast before.
Now for the moment I've all been waiting for.
I don't think I've ever done this on the podcast before.
Because you weren't on Dr. Dolittle.
That's
oh,
right.
God.
That's right. I wasn't on Dr. Dolittle. And you know something? I don't think I ever want to be. But this is, I think, in my first time in Bannerbox history, a 0 out of 10. Get this movie as far away from me as possible.
That's just so wild. I don't think it's deserving of a 0
loathed
out of 10.
Loathed it. It was the antithesis of everything that I like. I have more after the podcast thoughts, but for now, we'll just say no thank you.
Whatever you say, dude. I'm going with a 9.5. I love this movie. It's not perfect, so I'm not going to give it a 10 out of 10, because, you know, I can't do that. But I can't go any lower, because I love this movie. It's fun. I loved it. Watching it alone, I was out loud, like, reacting and wishing I was with other people, and I'm so happy I could finally share it with other people, and that it was just as, like, I loved it just as much as I did when I watched it a couple years ago. Yeah, I mean, I love it. I love showing it to people and asking if other people have seen it, and then trying to convince them to watch it, because it's just so fun, and yeah, as much as I know it bothered you, it does make me, like, I'm interested that I have found someone who doesn't like this, because everyone I know who has seen this movie loves it. They're like they all watch it and they're like, this is hilarious, this is amazing, I love this movie. So I'm fascinated that I finally met someone who does not like this movie.
Are you shocked it's me, though?
A little bit, because, you know, we'll talk about it, but we also I just
can't wait to hear, you know, Tyler's rating when we do Battle of the Five Armies.
Oh yeah. I don't know if he's gonna be on it with us.
I don't know if I'm gonna be on it with y'all. Hold on, I don't know.
Hold on, Tyler.
All right, we'll skip.
Tyler, Always Sunny guy didn't win half a point or 1 point.
No.
Tarantino loving this movie didn't win 1 point.
His opinion of it means nothing to me. I'm glad he enjoyed it.
All right. I don't understand the zero, because even when I hate something, like, I hated Attack of the Clones, I still gave it, like, a 4.
Because, again, remember my scale. 5 is just a perfectly movie, right? Not a perfect movie, but just that was a movie, right? Okay. I walked away from that, and I feel it was a little bit of good, and it was a little bit of bad, and I feel very neutral about it. And 10 is like, wow, that's like going on the good thing shelf. This was phenomenal. This was such a good movie. So what is a zero? A zero is, I found it physically repulsed. It's not that it's unattractive. It's that I'm physically repulsed by it, to quote an actual good movie. And I want to be as far away from this movie moving forward as I can. I don't know of another movie that's made me feel like that. 0 out of 10.
You need to see the Nicolas Cage version of The Wicker Man.
I'm good.
Oh my gosh.
That's the not the bees, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I think I've seen that.
Yes.
Oh my god.
It's really bad.
I want to continue viewing Nicolas Cage in the light that I view him in, and that light has been crafted through not really watching a whole lot of this stuff.
So Tyler, your new challenge is this. I need you to watch Dr. Doolittle.
I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it.
So that you can understand what an actual 0 out of 10 is, because it certainly isn't this. That's why I'm fighting you a little bit.
I'm really not doing that.
I don't fight people's ratings.
Yeah.
But I've seen a 0 out of 10.
Okay.
And I've hated movies.
I get it.
I have hated them.
Sure.
I've watched movies and been like, this sucks. And yet I've only given 0 out of 10. To Dr. Doolittle.
Rick goes over to the condition rings because we're all D&D, and he pulls up Cursed. Outstanding. Oh, that's phenomenal. But no, I'm not watching Dr. Doolittle. That's not happening.
We'll see about that. But I think, unless anyone has any final thoughts, I think that is it for this episode.
Thank you for bringing this movie to us.
Yes,
thank you.
You're welcome.
My night was fine.
I have been waiting for so long.
And then you showed up in my house.
Oh, stop inviting us over. So, next time, we'll be continuing our Lord of the Rings series with the second in the Hobbit trilogy. Which
the Desolation
is the one,
of Smaug.
Yes. My dragon is here, and I'm excited. So we'll be moving on to that next. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artist Entertainment. Heather's auditions coming up at the end of May, so be on the lookout for signups for that, as well as Dicebox. We have Ghosts of Salt Marsh. First episode is out now. Second episode will probably be out by the time this is posted. So check out Dicebox wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel. You can find it pretty easily if that's where you prefer to listen to your podcasts. And so just be on the lookout for all of that good stuff. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. It helps us out. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests for the future, you can send us a message on our social media. And we will see you guys next time. Bye!
Bye! Bye-bye.